From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Serena Williams is on top of the tennis world and has been for a long, long time now. She first won the U.S. Open in 1999, a 17-year-old girl with tremendous power and beads in her swinging hair. Now, almost 16 years later, she has 21 Grand Slam tournament titles to her name, 4 Olympic gold medals in singles and doubles, and is on the brink of winning the calendar Grand Slam. The Australian Open, the French Open, Wimbledon, and the U.S. Open all in one calendar year. That's only been done by 5 people in history. But Serena's influence goes beyond tennis to the greater world of sports and culture. This hour on Point, the reach of Serena Williams. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What does Serena Williams mean to you now? What does she stand for in tennis beyond? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Let's listen back to a little bit of remarkable tape here. This is 1992. Little Serena. Serena Williams, 11 years old. She and her sister Venus were profiled by Trans World Sport, a sports TV program produced in London. The interviewer asked Serena which tennis players she wanted to model herself after.
If you were a tennis player, who would you want to be like?
Well, I like other people to be like me.
Who would you want to be like? Well, I'd want other people to be like me. Here she was in that 1999 victory, her first Grand Slam tournament, the U.S. Open, 1999, 17 years old, spoke in a post-match interview with CBS. And the interview asked her about her emotions at 17, right after hitting the winning shot.
I didn't know what to do, laugh or cry or just scream. So I think I did it all.
This had been your dream,
and
here you realized it. I mean, that is, and you're 17.
Serena at 17, and now 33, going on 34 near the end of this month. After her Wimbledon victory in July, she talked with ESPN about how she's different now than she was the first time she won 4 major tournaments in a row 12 years ago.
I just had so many more years, and now I just feel like every moment counts, you know, every single match, every single tournament, everything, all the things that I worked on when I was young and growing up with my dad and, you know, my mom, and, just, you know, it's just like now's the time to do everything that I've worked on for my whole life.
Serena Williams, now's the time. We have a terrific panel with us today to look at Serena Williams and her reach, her impact within and beyond tennis. From Miami, Florida, Tondalea Wilder joins us. Sports commentator, contributor to NPR, founder of She Got Game Media. Tondalea Wilder, welcome to On Point. Thanks so much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
From Houston, Texas, Zena Garrison joins us, a top professional tennis player herself from 1982 to 97, runner-up at Wimbledon in 1990, a 3-time Grand Slam mixed doubles champion, and the women's doubles gold medalist and women's singles bronze medalist at the 1988 Olympic Games, a coach and mentor to Serena Williams for years, and like Serena, African-American. Zena Garrison, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
And from the U.S. Open in New York, Peter Bodo joins us, tennis writer for ESPN.com, author of Ash versus Connors, Wimbledon 1975. Peter Bodo, great to have you here from the Open.
Hi, Tom. My pleasure.
Can we just go, Zena, to you first, and the Open, and Serena right now. You've coached her, you've mentored her, you've played at the top level in tennis. How does she look so far in the Open?
Well, actually, I mean, I knew that she was going to be a little bit nervous. I mean, actually, she even, you know, texted me about it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of her just basically just getting within herself and playing from point to point, not looking ahead, not looking too far. Don't worry about what happened behind her as well. It's only what matters is that point that's in front of you.
Peter Bodo, how are people looking at her chances of taking the U.S. Open and with it winning the calendar Grand Slam?
Well, certainly people in my business learned quite a while ago that, boy, you know, you start saying that it's all over for Serena, that she's either too old or she's not playing well enough, or she's not confident enough, or she's having a bad tournament. You start thinking that when you're going to get burned. I mean, she has proven time and again, multiple times over and over, factor it by 10, take it to the nth degree, that you never, absolutely ever write her off. So, you know, she could be playing the worst tennis of her life, which she may have been doing at the French Open this year, which is her worst Grand Slam, by the way. And you could just never write her off. So I think, you know, she's become one of the players who almost needs the drama, in a sense, to sort of, you know, motivate herself to sort of dig deep. She's almost, you know, like the famous childhood story of Ferdinand the Bull. You know, she's almost a reluctant champion. She struggles with herself. She wonders, you know, she gets desperate, and then she comes up, and whatever's happening, she finds a way to win. She's incredible.
Tondalea Wilder, where does Serena Williams get that grit? She's famous for it. She's showed it again and again and again. She's got a lot of things going for her. Power, elegance, unbelievable form when she gets going. But that grit that's come through so many times, what do you trace it back to?
I think her upbringing, I think where she's come from, the adversities that she's had, you know, it makes you mentally tough, you know, and I agree with Peter and Zena, you know, the fact that she's kind of like the original comeback kid. You know, you can never count her out. She almost has this ability to will herself to win, and she's been through so much, so many controversies, all kinds of things that, you know, I think that's what makes her mentally strong and sets her apart sometimes.
After winning that first major tournament this year, the Australian Open, January this year, she talked to Serena Williams on the court about her background and her personal story.
I grew up, I wasn't the richest, but I had a rich family in spirit and support. And, you know, standing here with 19 championships is something I never thought would happen. You know, just I went on the courts with just a ball and a racket and a hope, and that's all I had. And it's inspiring for all you guys out there that want to do something and want to be the best that you can be.
Serena Williams at the Australian Open, born in Michigan, spent early years along with her sister Venus in Compton, California, tough neighborhood. Richard Williams, the father of Venus and Serena, taught both of them how to play in Compton, was a big influence on the development, the early years. Here he was describing, in his own terms, the influence of growing up in Compton on the girls.
Ghetto makes you real strong, real tough, real brave. Make you to a point that you believe you can do anything, and you will.
Richard Williams there, Zena Garrison, saying ghetto makes you real strong, real tough, real brave. We associate tennis with a kind of a country club atmosphere or environment. Many people learn to play in those green and leafy environs. Is the Compton story for real? Was this a real Compton family, Zena?
Oh, it was definitely for real. I was in the top 10, and I actually went to visit them one time in Compton. And Richard came to pick me up in a beat-up old van. And, you know, there was little Serena and Venus in the van. I went to their house. You know, I went to the courts that they grew up on. So it was definitely for real. But I think the added part to that as well is, like Serena mentioned, her mother and her father instill just some strong black women, just strong women within themselves. And I remember the first time that I spent some time around them, that was the first thing that I was very amazed at, is that they were so confident to be so young.
How would you describe what you saw? How old was Serena Williams when you first saw her? Venus, of course, is the older sister. How old were they when you first saw them? And what did you see in her form, her play, her determination?
Yeah, the very, very first time I saw them was at a Nancy Reagan, Ronald Reagan charity event in Los Angeles. And I remember Rosie Casale came over to me and said, "Hey, Zena, you got to come over and see these two little girls." And so I went over there, and I remember Serena, like, was crossing, and she was pumping her fists, and she, at that time, she was 7 or 8, so they weren't even high. I mean, Serena wasn't even high as the net. And she just had so much, like, emotions to her playing. And I remember everyone was talking about Venus, and I said, yeah, Venus will be good, but I am like, there's something about that little one, Serena. And, you know, they both turned out to be the number one players in the world, and what Serena has done from then on, I think has a big part of it is she always wanted to do better than what her sister did. So yeah. One got to number one, so they reached it, and then they just kept climbing.
Venus Williams joined us on the show here a couple of years ago. Here she was talking about with us on Point about her relationship with her sister Serena, their competitiveness, and their friendship.
We're actually used to being across the net from each other. And that's how we grew up. And that's really what we dreamed of, was being number one and two in the world. Of course, we both dreamed of being number one, not two.
And here from the 2012 documentary, Venus and Serena, here's Serena talking about growing up in the shadow of her older sister.
I was never supposed to be good. I was never the one that was supposed to be like a great player. But I was determined not to become a statistic. So that's the only reason I play tennis.
Peter Bodo, what has made Serena Williams in form a great player, a champion, such a champion?
Well, boy, where do you start? You know, she has, when she first came up, what struck me was she was this wonderful combination of, you could see she was going to be a strong player, that her body type was a little bit different from your classic, you know, thin, even from Venus, you know, which is kind of interesting, you know.
Yeah.
She wasn't the classic thin, long-limbed tennis player. She had more musculature. She was broader in the shoulders and stuff. So you could see she had potential for real power, but she also had a marvelous feel. She had really soft hands. That's gone by the wayside a little bit, I think. You know, and I'm a little sad about that, because it's wonderful to see people with a lot of touch, like Roger Federer, you see some of that too. But, you know, this combination of power and touch that she has, and then you add her movement, which is just terrific, and her court sense, which is great. You know, very often you know she gets to balls that you don't see how she gets to the kind of ball she gets to, because she isn't a player who makes it go ooh and ah with the way she runs around a court, the way, say, a Simona Halep or some of the other notable scramblers, the Radwanskas of the tour, do. So, you know, she's this total package of tremendous movement. She's got very, very powerful strokes. She doesn't hit with an overly great amount of spin. She has, and of course, it's all capped with a serve, and it all begins with the serve. I mean, if you can serve the way she serves, you can hold serve, you can do untold amounts of damage to other people's serve. That's the source of it all. Greatest serve ever in women's tennis.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Serena Williams, the undisputed queen of tennis, going for a big Grand Slam, calendar year Grand Slam in the U.S. Open right now, and what she's meant in sports and beyond. Former professional tennis player, coach, and mentor to Serena Williams, Zena Garrison, joins us today from Houston, Texas. The USAR is a runner-up in Wimbledon in 1990, gold medals in the Olympics, and right on down, founder of the Zena Garrison Tennis Academy there, with us from Texas. Tom DeLeo Wilder with us from Miami, sports commentator, NPR contributor, founder of She Got Game Media. Peter Bodo is with us from ESPN.com, and he is at the U.S. Open. We're right in the middle of things there now. If Serena Williams wins, it's a calendar Grand Slam, the rarest of things. Only two men have ever done it. Many of the best players in tennis have never done it. Martina Navratilova didn't do it. Chris Evert didn't do it. Billie Jean King didn't do it. Serena Williams on the brink of doing it right now. After she won the Australian Open in January, her 19th Grand Slam tournament win, an Australian tennis official talked to the crowd about Serena Williams' legacy.
Have we ever seen anything quite like her? She's a phenomenon, an icon, a legend.
Here's a little video put together by Chase, one of her sponsors, celebrities including Misty Copeland, the muscular, beautiful ballet dancer, Katie Couric, Jamie Dimon, the big Wall Street guy, Richard Sherman, Michael Strahan, the actor, Eva Longoria, all weighing in on the legend of Serena Williams.
You represent what every person should strive for.
And flexibility. Damn, girl!
When I think of Serena Williams, I think of a beautiful and powerful woman with a big and strong heart who is poetry in motion on the tennis court.
Congratulations, Serena, on an incredible career and all your accomplishments.
Do it, girl.
You are awesome.
Celebrities laying it on Serena Williams, and now the pressure is on. Here, after her July victory at Wimbledon, an ESPN interviewer asked her about the chance of winning the calendar Grand Slam.
You've achieved so much, but for the first time, you've won the first three.
I know, I don't want to talk about it.
I know. Zena, Peter, Tundalea, please stand by. Lots of callers here. Margo in Roxbury, Massachusetts. Margo, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Greetings. I'd like to talk about, and she's beautiful, she's powerful, but I'd like to talk even more about her impact beyond tennis.
Okay.
And what we don't talk about often is the extreme racism that she and personal attacks that she's had to withstand and perform. And I think that puts her in a class all by herself. When you talk about the others who have accomplished what she accomplished, well, they did not have to accomplish it under vicious, racist, and personal attacks. And that speaks tremendously about her resilience, her power, her grace, and her her impact on the world.
Margo, I'm glad you put it just that way. Tundale Wilder, what about it? In her history, and Venus for that matter, but take Serena in particular, and the what she has faced over time. How would you describe it? You hear, you know, Margo says vicious personal racist attacks. Fair?
To some degree, yes, I do think that's a fair assessment. I think that her ethnicity and has come into play on more than one occasion where it's been unfair from write-ups, be it from bloggers or sports journalists or whatever. And there's also, of course, been some corporate bias, and you can see that very evidently when you just look at the endorsement gap and how much she receives compared to some other tennis players who aren't on the level that she's on. So I think to some degree that, you know, there have been some issues that she's had to overcome. And then, of course, you know, the whole body image issue has been one that's really something that just we shouldn't even be discussing, because she's an elite athlete. She has the body of an elite athlete. She has the fitness regimen of an elite athlete. I think that any companies considering whether they want to, for example, put their endorsement dollars behind her should ask themselves, do they want to endorse an athlete because they have so-called traditional model looks, or do they want to endorse a champion and a winner? Because that's exactly what she's been.
I want to look first at the race part of this. Of course, when you think about that, and the Williams sisters, Indian Wells comes to mind right away. And that famous incident in 2001 at the Indian Wells tournament in California, Venus pulled out of a match against Serena just a few minutes before that match was to begin, citing tendonitis. Some said that Richard Williams had told her to throw the match the next day at the final. When Richard and Venus Williams walked through the stadium to watch Serena, the crowd booed. And Richard, the father, later told news outlets people were shouting racial slurs at them. ESPN commentator Pam Shriver described the scene to her colleague Mary Jo Fernandez.
It's a long walk down to the courtside box. And then in a minute, there's going to be a heckler. Richard actually stopped and looked at somebody, and it was a very tense situation, Mary Jo. I've never seen anything like this at a tennis
match.
Neither
have I.
Zina, that's a remarkable, Zina Garrison, a remarkable wave of sound for a tennis tournament. How much of that do you attribute to these issues of race, as Richard Williams said? How much to just the way he was playing, his daughters, and what Serena has had to deal with over the years?
Well, I'd first like to say, I mean, that particular incident, I mean, there are, let's be real, there is racism in our country. And unfortunately, there were some things that were said. That's why it took so long for Serena to make a great effort on her part this year to actually come back and to forgive and forget. I would just like to say, you know, the thing is, all the experiences that Serena has come through to this point has made her the person that she is today, whether it's race or whether it's body image or whatever. I think this is why she is today have the opportunity to win a Grand Slam up to this point. It's just made her tougher. It's something that, as an African-American tennis player, it's like we kind of have grown up knowing that there are certain things that go against us. We know that there's, when we go out there and play, there are certain situations where, you know, you have to be even better. That's just part of it. I think the great thing about both of them is they have not turned it into a negative. They turned it into a positive. And I think in, especially what's going on in our country today, I thought when Serena went back to Indian Wells was perfect timing, for young people to really get an understanding that, you know, you don't have to be held back by who you are or what was said or whatever. It's just, you know, be the person you are. Do the things that needs to be done. I think respect has been lost in our country. And I think that she's, you know, she's showing that, you know, you can put things behind you and be the person that she wants to be.
This year, of course, she decided to play at Indian Wells again and released a video in March, Serena Williams, explaining the reasons for her decision as well as the impact of that 2001 incident that we just heard there, the impact that had on her.
Indian Wells holds a special place in my heart. It's where I won my first professional match, but it is also where I lost a piece of myself. For a long time, I just couldn't imagine revisiting one of the darkest moments of my career. Over the past few years, I've grown tremendously as a tennis player and even more importantly, as a human being.
It's where I won my first professional match, but also where I lost a piece of myself. Peter Bodo, a great piece by Brian Phillips in Grantland out just 2 years ago. You can link to it from our website, onpointradio.org. And he says in there, rarely in the history of modern sports has a figure of such obvious strength, Serena Williams, seemed to stand so often in a kind of atmospheric peril. And that even right on the court, right in the presence of fans. Have you seen what he's talking about there, Peter?
Well, yes. I mean, I have. I think... You know, but I think, you know, and Serena also has one of her great gifts and talents, I think, as she's matured, has been her ability to learn how to navigate. And, you know, let's be frank about this. She's learned to deal with these issues and to handle them to her advantage and to sit back and say, you know what, I'm a person of tremendous power. I have an enormous amount of impact out there in the world. I may want to just tell these people, get lost, I'm never going to play here again. I might want to say, you know what, this society is besotted with racism. I'm not going to deal with it. I'm going to, you know, do this, do that, do the other thing. But I think she's taken a next step. She's actually become a person who's figured out how she's going to be basically a role model. She has changed enormously in terms of when you listen to her talk about the opponent she beats now. She's very respectful. You watch her when she shakes hands at the net with opponents. You know, she's very gracious. She's become an absolute, you know, a model of good behavior, of doing the right thing, of saying the right things. She's become extremely diplomatic. So, you know, I think she's been through a lot that way. She's matured. You know, which doesn't mean to say she was immature in boycotting Indian Wells for so many years. I mean, I think it was perfectly within her rights. I can understand totally why she did it. But, you know, I think it's been a journey for her, but also she's, you know, this is also part of advancing her image, her brand, and becoming an adult and a person of tremendous power and influence in society.
Tough point, low point on that public presentation. Yes, she's been very gracious lately. 2009, famously, matched at the U.S. Open against Kim Clijsters and called for a foot fault, a rare penalty on the point. Before match point, screamed at the lineswoman who made the call, dropping the F word, saying, I swear to God, I'm going to take this beep ball and shove it down your beep throat. You hear me? I swear to God. It was pretty rough. You can barely hear it over the crowd noise. Zina Garrison, I mean, you really can't even make it out there, but there were people on the court. Sometimes the pressure is overwhelming, I suppose, but she has certainly shown a ton of grace lately.
Yeah, I mean, that's also the thing. People have no idea how it feels to, you know, unless you've been a professional tennis player, to be on Arthur Ashe Stadium, to be in a big match. We do have a tendency to sometimes lose ourselves. I'm not a person that curse, but I do curse on the court, so I lose myself. So I totally understand. But, you know, I think, once again, that was a lesson that of her experiences that she learned from. She got a valid, I know for sure, she took away a lot from that and started to really soul search in herself and what was going on with herself and in her life. And, you know, it was just one added situation that is making her the person that she is today. I would like to also say that because of all these experiences, she's finally getting to where I've been wanting her to be for quite some time. Is I think she has the valid effort to be like an Arthur Ashe with, you know, humanity and giving back and doing it. But she's doing it in her own way and in the way of what I like to call the social media young people. And she's, you know, she's touching a lot of young people, and I talk to them a lot about, you know, what they think when she's gone through situations, when she went back to Indian Wells. And she's really, and especially the body image thing, young people, she's really getting it across to to them about, you know, being comfortable with yourself, trying to be the best you can be, but being comfortable with yourself.
Bring the power if you've got it and use it for good. Glenn in North Canton, Ohio. Glenn, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Hi, Tom. I've been a lifelong tennis fan, and I just think, well, I guess lately mostly Serena because of Venus's sickness, but Serena's just been a great thing for the game. She when she first started, I was just amazed at how aggressive she played, and then off court, other listeners have commented on how great she's been, and she just you know, just radiates optimism, and she thinks she's a great sportsman and. Or a sportswoman, and I try to hold her up as a great role model for my 12-year-old daughter, and I think exemplifying her on and off the court is a great thing for young people to do.
There's the evidence that everybody's come a long way, and Serena's standing for that now for your 12-year-old daughter, who we wish well. Tundalay Wilder, what about her impact or influence off the court for the wider world of people who, of course, are aware of her? You can't not know about Serena Williams, her power, her grace on the court, sort of something about the evolution of her personality and posture in public.
Yeah, I mean, I think what a lot of people may play down is the sisterly love aspect of Serena Williams and also Venus, the bond that they have, and, you know, how rare it is to have a scenario where, you know, your sister is playing the same professional sport that you're playing, you know, and
tough.
The fact that both of you have been dominant over the years and, you know, you don't really hear that much about sibling rivalry between the two. You hear about them being besties, and of course they've had to go against each other, you know. But I think that's something that really, in terms of looking at Serena as an icon, just this is something that is downplayed, and I think that we should pay a little bit more attention to it. You know, the sisterly bond and how Venus has been her support system and vice versa.
Yasmin in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Yasmin, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Okay, thank you so much for taking my call. Basically, you know, I wanted to state that, you know, as an African American woman, she is, you know, at the top of the Holy Grail for me. She is one of the most iconic figures of history. But most importantly, I am so grateful that she is presenting another side of Straight Out of Compton and another perspective on what's possible for young kids coming out of an urban environment to achieve in their lives. And I just want to say thank you to her parents, you know, for supporting her to this point in her life. And thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to speak.
Yes, but I'm very glad for your call right there. Jennifer writes to us on the website, onpointradio.org. Serena's a friend of a friend, and I've been in her presence many times. She's kind, funny, devoid of ego, and actually kind of shy. Her tennis personality is fierce, strong, awesome, all-encompassing. Her off-court presence, lovely, sweet, human being. Tundalay Wilder, it's been great to have you with us. I know we have to let you go, but thanks so much for joining us for a little bit from Miami here today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at WBUR.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Serena Williams, the undisputed queen of tennis, going for a big Grand Slam, calendar Grand Slam in the U.S. Open right now, and what she has meant in sports and tennis and beyond. Zena Garrison is with us, great professional tennis player herself from 82 to 97, a longtime coach and mentor to Serena Williams, known her since she's very young. Joining us today from Houston, Texas, Peter Botto is with us from the U.S. Open, tennis writer for ESPN.com, author of Ash versus Connors, Wimbledon 1975. 1988 was the last time a woman, the legendary champion Steffi Graf, won the calendar Grand Slam. All four Australian, French Open, Wimbledon, U.S. Open, all in one calendar year. Here's the sound of the CBS commentator talking about that historic moment.
We have witnessed tennis history today. For only the third time has a lady won the Grand Slam. And Steffi Graf has done that today.
1988, if Serena Williams pulls it off in at the U.S. Open, just the fourth ever. 2012 documentary Venus and Serena, just one of her fans, former President Bill Clinton, talked about watching a very young Serena Williams play.
At first, I just saw them as a sports fan. Serena, she was only 17 at the time. And she just gave this aura out that, you know what, once she mastered her power, nobody in the world would be able to beat her.
Well, and that's where we are right now. Lloyd, at least lately, Lloyd in Charleston, South Carolina. Lloyd, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I was the tennis director at a major club in Palm Beach County. This was in
where the Williams family moved after Compton, when the girls were, what, just heading...
When they moved from Compton to Palm Beach Garden.
Yeah.
At the time, they were very young, and they hadn't won anything, and they weren't pros. But Reebok gave them a $500,000 to their father, who negotiated that. Now, he was a really tough guy, and he was very tough on them. But he built four tennis courts on four different surfaces, artificial grass, clay, and asphalt.
With that $500,000 from Reebok, I guess.
That's right.
Okay.
And he had the tennis courts, but they were only a few miles from my club.
Mm-hmm.
So I was teaching, not only was I the tennis director, I also became the college coach for men's and women's at a college right near us.
Yeah.
So I was teaching two of my varsity players who happened to be the varsity, not just the varsity, but the Davis Cup team from a Caribbean island, and they were very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy walks down the steps onto my teaching court, and he's very big, and he was a black guy, and he just walked right up to me and interrupted my play, didn't say who he was or anything. And he said, I'd like to get some games for my daughters.
With the guys that you were coaching?
With the guys, because no women in Florida could beat them.
The Williams
sisters, anyway,
wow.
I said, I've got two guys right over here I'm practicing with. That are Davis Cup team from the Caribbean. Now, I did not tell him that my guys at that time could beat them 2-2. I didn't say that. Mm. I just said, I've got two guys
that
can really help the game. He wrote down his number real quick, never introduced himself, never shook hands with me, walked out.
All business. Wow.
I called him, and all was on his phone was my daughter, Venus, is playing, this is her week's schedule in California. My daughter, Serena, this is her week's schedule in so-and-so. And there was no call me back at any number. So I never got a chance to actually give them the really kind of competition that they needed in Florida at the time.
But he was looking for it. He came to you looking. It never quite happened, but he was out to find somebody who could give them a challenge. Zena Garrison, what about that story and the way Richard Williams handled
the training of these two sisters. I mean, you've got to say it's panned out pretty well. He was tough.
No, he was very tough. I mean, I know I would get phone calls at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I would say, Richard, call me later. He's like, why aren't you up training? The girls are ready to train. Oh, like, geez. And he would ask for advice, you know, on their training and just, you know, just how, you know, getting them to the professionals, people he's talked to, you know. I definitely know that story is very much true because that was Richard. I mean, he, you know, Peter can even talk about this as well. He told all of us that the girls were going to be number one in the world, and even when people thought he was crazy, he had that confidence in his girls and what he was teaching them and training. And the thing that I loved about Richard and also Orosine that he projected onto the girls is that very open-minded and listening and wanting advice to help them get where they want to go. He was very good at that. And even, you know, Venus and Serena to this day, I mean, even all the great things that they've done, they're still trying to improve. They're still champions in heart. They still want information to help them in their game.
Peter Bodo, was Richard crazy, or was there reason to see potential world champs in these two sisters? Or does it take a little crazy to go where they've gone?
Boy, Zena was right. I mean, Zena and I go back a long way. And she knows Richard was crazy, all right. He was crazy like a fox.
Yeah.
I mean, Richard was like a dog who knows where the bone is buried. That's what he did all of his life. You know, the Compton narrative is very, very interesting. Sometimes I wonder if people try to use Compton to legitimize tennis or use tennis to legitimize Compton. And I think the point that the caller Yasmin made was very interesting about, you know, being thankful for the kind of parenting and stuff that shows there's another way for urban youth. I mean, I think, you know, what's interesting, tennis parents got a terrible, terrible rap, but the bottom line is, without tennis parents, you know, almost all of the players who come up through the ranks have a very, very powerful influence of the parents or a parent figure. In Zena's case, it was a coach named John Wilkerson. I remember going to interview Zena when she was a little child, and I was picked up by a man in a beaten-up car, just like Richard Williams drove, and taken to an urban park, McGregor Park in Houston, much like the park in Compton, where the Williams girls were trained. And it was because John Wilkerson, an upstanding, very, very moralistic coach who was training Zena and Lori McNeil, trained them to be champions, had really cared about them. That's what really, really mattered. He was kind of a quasi-father figure. So, you know, the role of the parent is incredibly important. Richard Williams, though, sort of took it to another level in the sense that from day one, he knew what he wanted for his girls. He was willing to do everything for his girls. He wasn't too proud to knock down doors, to walk out onto a court to a guy he didn't know, interrupt a training session.
Yeah.
You know, it took unbelievable chutzpah, but that's what he was. That was Richard Williams to a T, crazy like a fox. And one thing I loved about the man was he could talk in any terms. He was a guy who would throw around all kinds of horrible, even, you know, racial terms and stuff. He didn't care. He said what was on his mind, what he thought, what you saw is what you get. He was a very refreshing character and kind of a very, just a one-of-a-kind guy.
Let me go to Detroit, Michigan. In Detroit, Aaron, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I am a diehard tennis fan, right? And I've been following the Williams sisters from the beginning. I want to say this. I started playing tennis in the early 70s because the basketball courts had become so dangerous. So me and my brother-in-law, future brother-in-law at the time, we started playing tennis because we figured there would be girls on the tennis court. And I like tennis because tennis – as a sport, it's probably the closest sport to boxing because you're there by yourself and you're punching and it's like an endurance thing. And I say that because I knew when I saw Serena play that her tenacity and her body type was going to make her successful. And she doesn't like to lose.
No.
That's what her greatest strength is she does not like to lose. And that's why she plays Sharapova so hard, because that was her greatest competition at one time, and she refused to lose to her. Her tenacity and her will to win. Let me say this before I close.
Yeah.
I was mad at Richard Williams because he didn't let them play junior tennis. He wouldn't let them play in a lot of tournaments, and I thought he was denying them their history, because tennis is a young person's sport.
Their girlhood, for bypassing that, yeah.
Right. And so now it seems like he really was a genius, because her longevity is probably going to be her greatest asset in the end of her career, because she could foreseeably win another Grand Slam next year, because the only thing that can stop her from winning is her.
22nd major Grand Slam title would tie the Open era record of Steffi Graf going back to 99. Aaron, you have watched closely from Detroit. Maybe Papa Richard had it right. So many callers here. Let me get one more. Aaron, thanks. Hugh in Lexington, Kentucky. Hugh, you're on.
Hey, Tom. I have two daughters, 13 and 9-year-old, that are involved in a sport that also celebrates women being large and powerful. They're in junior roller derby. And, Serena has, I think, brought to the fore it being okay for women to be large and powerful, you know, just tangibly, viscerally powerful, but yet still very attractive. And I've always been reminded of Richard Crum, the feminist cartoonist of the 1970s, who drew, I don't want to use the term caricature because that's maybe disrespectful, but images of, you know, these large women
yep.
that were still very attractive, and I should go so far as to say, I'll just say attractive and leave it at that. But so I think that's, to me, in as far as my kids go, what she has done and has brought that, I guess, to our culture, that it is now okay, and that
it's okay to be strong. It's okay to be full bodied. And she certainly is. But she's taken heat on that front. Hugh, I appreciate your call. I mean, over time, you know, Twitter users would go after her, built like a man and all that. New York Times has written about body image around Serena Williams. She's spoken about it. Here was an interview with ABC's Robin Roberts just this week. Serena Williams responding to all that.
I embrace me, and I love how I look. I love that I am a full woman, and I'm strong, and I'm powerful, and I'm beautiful at the same time. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I just don't have time to be brought down. I have too many things to do. You know, I have Grand Slams to win. I have people to inspire.
I have Grand Slams to win. I'm a little busy. But Zena, there was her sister who was much more like the traditional tennis body type. Was that an issue between the two of them, or in working out Serena's form through the mechanics and the presence of her own body?
No. I'll go back to what I said earlier, is that I think their parents did a great job on, and especially always seen, instilling in them that they're beautiful mm-hmm. and very strong women and black women. And so they heard that every day. I remember asking Venus one time, it's like, where does that confidence come from? And she told me that her mom would tell them every day, all of her girls, that, you know, that they were beautiful, they were strong, they were smart, they could do anything. And once you hear that so much, I mean, you truly believe it. But I take my hat off to Aura Scene for what she did for all of our girls, because, I mean, if you talk to any of her sisters, they have that same confidence within themselves. And Serena, just being the baby and me being the baby, I mm-hmm. totally understand. You have a tendency to suck up everything that's been said about your older siblings, and you want to do it even better. And so she's just taking it to another level.
Mama Williams right in there giving that confidence. I should say, by the way, we've got some terrific video at the website, onpointradio.org, of Serena and Venus, very young. I think Serena's 11 years old there, and it's really something to see. Check it out. Bonita in New Haven, Connecticut. Bonita, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you, Tom. I just wanted to say that, you know, I've been watching Venus and Serena for years, ever since they came out, because I've always been a long-term tennis fan.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things was, because being an African-American woman, the only two black tennis players I knew were Arthur Ashe. I'd watched him play at the end of his career, and then I'd watched Zena play.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the Williams sisters came, that was such a great thing to watch these young girls do so well. And I think the thing with Serena is she just had that hunger. She just always wanted to win. And what always stayed in my mind was when she lost to Venus at Wimbledon, and she looked like she was about to cry.
Yeah.
And I think in her mind she was like, I have to be the best, even though I love my sister. I want to be the best.
Yeah.
And she's always been that way. And, you know, I just say hats off to her, and I just wish her the best for the U.S. Open. And I hope that she's able to do a calendar year Grand Slam.
It would sure be exciting, and we're in the middle of it right now. Bonita, thanks so much for your call. Peter Bodo, this the best. This gets tossed around. I mean, if she wins the U.S. Open, that would be fifth consecutive major. The only other one who's had that is Steffi Graf, 1989. Is there a case that Serena Williams is the best tennis player of all time?
So. I believe it, yeah. There's really not much doubt in my mind. I mean, I think Steffi Graf, you know, is very close there. The one advantage Steffi Graf has maybe in a balance of the record, you know, she won all four majors at least four times.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit more balance in her record. But I think just from the evidence of my eyes, and I saw Steffi Graf play a lot. Unfortunately, I'm old enough to have seen it, have seen all this stuff. And there's no doubt in my mind, Serena, just, you know, the power she brings, the serve, the greatest serve ever in women's tennis, and it all begins in tennis with the serve. It's a case closed for me. I mean, I think if she equals and surpasses Steffi Graf's single count, even if she doesn't get the Grand Slam, I think it's an open and shut case for me.
Zena Garrison, you are our pro. What's the advice that you would or perhaps have? What would you whisper in Serena's ear in these next few days?
Pretty much what I've been whispering in a year from, like, starting a month ago, just basically, I mean, she really just has to stay within herself. I think she's doing a great job of just, you know, tweaking what she needs to tweak when she needs to tweak it, and know that the pressure is going to come, and what are you going to do when the pressure comes? How are you going to handle it? I think she's done an exceptional job of not trying to act like it's not happening. I was pretty surprised. She's talking to a lot of media and doing a lot of things, and I think she's looking at it just like she needs to look at it. She needs to go and face it from the beginning, because there will be a point in there where she'll get so tight.
We'll all be watching. Zena, we're against the clock. We honor your beautiful career as well. Zena Garrison with us from Houston. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Peter Bodo at ESPN.com. Thank you, Peter, at the U.S. Open.
My pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.